When we left off last time, we were in Missouri, heading west. We just left a ghost town in the making, a little place called Haiti, which I've been informed by listener Victoria is pronounced Haiti. It's always fascinating how folks have their own pronunciations for names in their area. In Manhattan, there's a famous place called Houston Street, yet no one in New York calls it anything but Houston. Across the river in Jersey is the town of Bogota, but they say Bogota. In L.A., Los Felices, Los Feliz, and San Pedro is San Pedro, and on it goes. I bet somebody has studied this stuff, how these offbeat pronunciations happen. I find it interesting, but not so interesting to do the research and discover the reasons. There are more pressing questions keeping me up at night, like how to destroy all commies. This is episode 273, part 4 of my forbidden road trip across America.
The safari park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hands off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Come on, Larry. Larry.
After we bailed out of Haiti, which I really did like, by the way. Not sure why, but I dug it. Maybe I do know why. Because although the town has clearly hit hard times, it has retained its dignity. The streets might be empty, but they're clean. The people are friendly. I never felt as if we were in danger. And state crime statistics bear that out. As well as the old adage, poverty does not cause crime. Crime causes poverty. I wish good luck and prosperity for Haiti. Next stop is another larger ghost town in progress, a place called Blytheville, Arkansas. You could see it had once been pretty prosperous. Lots of substantial buildings and homes. Now, so many were empty. It's fascinating to see the architectural cosmetics small towns deploy when they fall on hard times. And why some work and others don't. Many years ago, a large chunk of Santa Monica, that's a beach neighborhood in Los Angeles, a lot of Santa Monica was a crime-ridden shithole. One of the things that turned it around was they took several blocks of a main drag, 3rd Street, and made it a pedestrian, walking zone. They renamed it the 3rd Street Promenade, and the transformation was fast and amazing. It soon became one of L.A.'s major tourist destinations. Lots of high-end restaurants and boutiques. I haven't been to Santa Monica in a while, but someone told me it's headed for shitholdom again, thanks to the quarantine. Lots and lots of empty retail space. Lots of druggy derelicts holed up and shooting up in those empty storefronts. Maybe Santa Monica's destiny is to be a shithole. Of course, it is a commie stronghold. That may have something to do with it. No, that has everything to do with it. So the city of Blytheville looks like it tried the Santa Monica solution for urban revitalization, but it didn't take hold. There's a retail main street there, and oh my god, it looks like a set for an apocalypse movie. Huge ornate iron arches are placed at every intersection, declaring Blytheville, Arkansas. Hey, there's another one. Why the hell isn't it Arkansas? But all those iron arches do is frame the decay. Once upon a time, Blytheville was something of a force in the steel industry, and there was an Air Force base nearby. Those went away, and so did the economic base. When you walk through that ghostly area, you can see it was once pretty grand. And you get a sense of when it collapsed. There's a storefront for a business that's not been viable for decades. Rick's TV Service. The faded sign over the door says, television, satellites, VCR, and microwave. Rick probably wasn't repairing any satellites, but there is a gray dish in the front window, which gives us sort of a timestamp on just when Rick finally threw in the soldering iron. Amazingly, Main Street has not a single tenant. Yet, none of those empty store windows are smashed. There's no graffiti. Nobody living in doorways. Unlike vibrant megalopolis Los Angeles, where, just prior to this idiotic lockdown, many high-end restaurants were adorned by nodding junkies in their doorways. And calling the cops to remove them is futile because, well, they're rights. They're right to shit and piss and jerk off and shoot up on the sidewalk. And they're right to rip off any supermarket or store for less than $900 and face no more consequence than a misdemeanor citation. Fact is, L.A. already is a ghost town in progress, but the kumbaya jackholes and morons who voted in commie politicians are too stupid to realize it. And when all the storefronts are empty, as those in Blytheville, Arkansas, and Hayti, they won't remain as silent but dignified relics of faded glory. In L.A., they'll be smashed and burned, and awash in needles and graffiti and filth. A true hellscape. Because in Los Angeles, drug-addicted criminals are a protected class. Maybe Blytheville's most interesting attraction is it's a Greyhound bus station from 1937. It was decommissioned like 20 years ago. So the city bought it, and there it stands as a welcome center / museum. But the odd thing is, there's no sign whatsoever telling people that it is a welcome center museum. When I first saw it, I thought, it's got to be some guy's pipe dream. Thought maybe he could clean it up and rent it out for movie shoots and parties. The interior is spotless, and they managed to ratchet it into the Twilight Zone with a one item that infuses any location with the creepy and the weird. A mannequin. There's nothing like a mannequin out of place to add a heaping helping of the bizarre. By the way, I'll post pictures of all this stuff on the show page at thatlarryshow.com. As you know, I love ruins, and I should create a subcategory of ruins, the busted pipe dream ruins. The world is full of them, but they're probably most visible in the mid and southwest, where there's simply more open space, so it's hard to miss them. They always have a similar story. Some guy gets a bug up his ass or in his head, and he's certain his theme park or theme restaurant or whatever, there's always a theme, that it will attract hordes of tourists and their credit cards. There's a massive pipe dream soon to be a ruin on the road to Las Vegas. It's in a little town called Baker, whose claim to fame is a 134-foot thermometer. And just across the road a piece is the Alien Fresh Jerky Store, because everyone knows little green men love beef jerky. The theme, I suppose, plays off the whole Area 51 Roswell aliens like to land in the desert idea. And the store is cool. Lots of original t-shirts and icy cold drinks like Rat Bastard Root Beer, Ray Gun refrigerator magnets and such. And it may succeed, I hope it does, but behind it, under construction, is the Alien Jerky Hotel. And I get stopping in Baker to cool off on your way to Vegas. But why would you stay there when Vegas is just an hour away? What do you do in Baker besides check that thermometer? Well, that's what the website for the town of Baker suggests. See what's happening at the thermometer. Wow. It's right there in big red letters. What that thermometer needs is mannequins. Whoa, how did I get so far off track? Stay on task, Larry. So after Blytheville came a stop that was extra creepy, and I didn't see even one mannequin. But I did see some shit that made me concerned. Not for my own safety, because I always take a trunk monkey on long trips. But I was concerned for the citizenry of Osceola, Arkansas. For the most part, looks like any other sleepy southern town. And I was not really worried, even when I saw the unholy trinity of signage that tells you you are in danger. And that trinity is bail bonds, pawn shops, and payday loans. When you see those businesses, especially the first, in close proximity, make sure your doors are locked and your trunk monkey is ready for action. But then the town of Osceola took that high alert feeling to an even greater intensity when we entered the zone called OHA, and that would be the Osceola Housing Authority. And doesn't it make perfect sense that where government is involved, things really go to shit? OHM, of course, is public housing, but this was a collection of one-story brick dungeons on dirt lawns that said nothing so much as abandoned hope. It was grim. What really lit the jets on the hellscape was the massive Orwellian security cameras mounted on poles 20 feet high with constant flashing purple strobes. It was fucking eerie and depressing. I didn't see a soul on the street. Where was everyone? What images had been recorded by those hideous cameras by night? Rural poverty is one thing, yet when you see it, there's sometimes a glimmer of hope within the despair. A freshly painted shack, maybe a lawn with green grass and flowers, an old but clean car in the driveway, some visual cue that says, hey, this place could be okay. I'm trying. There wasn't the slightest glimmer of hope in Osceola's OHM. Pure gloom on a bright, cloudless day. Last year, Osceola was the second most dangerous place in all of Arkansas. The FBI says you have a 1 in 76 chance of being a victim of rape, murder, or assault. Sad. Next stop is a little burg called Convoy. And as with most towns just off an interstate, there's a newer, wider boulevard where all the corporate bandits are, right? The ones that are easy on and easy off. Waffle House and Starbucks and Denny's and so on. My kid had a hankering for an ice cream, and there was some big, obviously corporate store, Andy's Frozen Custard. It was about 100 degrees with matching humidity, and Andy's, with all their corporate muscle and MBA management, had not thought to place a few benches and umbrellas outside in that wilting heat. So it was adios, Andy. We headed into downtown Convoy, and serendipitously, there was a mom-and-pop store, Las Delicias homemade ice cream. Pretty fabulous. Slices of kiwi fruit built right into an ice pop. Stuff like that. Tables outside with seats and shade. Funny how the so-called amateurs can outgun all those marketing geniuses. It was right near the center of a town at a place called Toad Suck Square. Seems if you lick the sweat from certain species of toad, you're in for a psychedelic trip comparable to LSD. What's really amazing is that this is a college town, and in this age of Karens and behavior Nazis, that they would allow the town square to be named after such a druggy thing. I'm not into drugs, but I applaud that name and that ethos. That night we holed up in Fort Smith, one of those big atrium-style hotels with glass elevators. Dinner was at AJ's Oyster House, killer seafood, and a chill atmosphere. Yeah, the server wore a mask, but he wasn't tense about it. Fort Smith seemed like a pretty cool place, but way too quiet. There were music clubs and bars and restaurants, not a sound coming from them, and almost no one in the street. But still in Arkansas, a lot of places are serving inside. And only the waitstaff is wearing masks. Clearly, Arkansas is tired of all the fear-mongering. There's a lot to like about that state. Pretty country. People seem laid back. We were getting behind schedule, so we pressed on without any stop to the town of Elk City, Oklahoma. One of Elk City's big attractions is a fabricated Route 66 museum. I don't get that. The real Route 66 is right there. Yeah, but maybe I do get it. Some people like things artificial, and more important, sanitized. I was once on a Caribbean cruise, and the ship docked at an island owned by the cruise line. There was snorkeling in a safe, finger quotes, area, and they had actually planted fake pirate chests and conch shells and rusty anchors and shit beneath the surface. It was utterly moronic when the Caribbean is dotted with real reefs and wrecks. I shucked the flippers and goggles and headed for the bar. But the majority of tourists thought all that fake shit was marvelous. After the long drive through Oklahoma, I wanted a beer, so I stopped in this little liquor store. A blue-haired old woman was on the telephone when I entered. I scanned the cooler looking for something, anything that wasn't light. What is it with light beer? If you don't want beer, drink club soda instead. So I'm standing there. My back is to her and the place is small, so I can't help but hear her conversation. And I hear her say,
"Thank you for killing me. In Jesus' name."
I froze. The only sound was the hum of the air conditioning. Did I just hear that right? Nah. Must be road fatigue.
"Yes, I am now deceased, and you are my savior, praise the Lord."
I have to turn around and look. She's got the phone to her ear and she's staring at the ceiling. What's up there? What does she see? Or maybe there's a guy under the counter holding a shotgun on her. I reach for the door. She puts the phone down and glares at me and jerks her head at the beer cooler.
"Nothing to your liking in there?"
"No, I don't like light beer."
"Well, is Corona in there?"
"No, that's light too."
"No, it ain't. It's Mexican."
Then I'm thinking, maybe she's the one holding the shotgun on somebody under the counter. I grab the door and I'm gone. Dinner was at a fantastic place built inside an old train station that had that retro vibe, you know, tin ceilings and gas lamps, and nobody wearing a mask. Nobody giving you the stink eye. Food was great. People were cool. My wife asked the waitress if the dessert was big. Waitress looks at me and says, "It's big, but not as big as his face." The wife and daughter found endless amusement in that. So I stiffed her. No, I thought it was funny, too. I do have a big face and a big head and a big brain. The headaches are jumbo size, too. Yeah, she got 20%. There are a couple more ghost towns we stopped in Oklahoma. A place called Sayre. You could have fired a cannon down Main Street at noon with total safety. Big, wide boulevard. No cars, no business, no people. On the way out of that town is a yellow road sign saying, "Hitchhikers may be escaping inmates." That's a beacon of tourists right there. A few clicks from Sayre is what's left of a town called Erick, Oklahoma. It has two claims to fame. One is it was the home of singer Roger Miller. The other is some old guy who runs a weird little tourist trap. They say he was the inspiration for the main character from the movie Cars. I'll post pictures of those places too. We made it to Albuquerque by sundown. New Mexico, unlike other states we passed through it. Oh, I gotta give you the rest of that cucked and uncucked list right now. New Mexico was taking the quarantine real serious. Only outside dining, everybody masked up everywhere. Old Town Albuquerque is a pretty cool place, but it was deserted. Most of the businesses were closed. Fear was everywhere. So the list heading west from Missouri is as follows. Missouri, uncucked. Arkansas, uncucked. Oklahoma, uncucked. Texas, very uncucked. New Mexico, very cucked. Sorry. Arizona, uncucked. And of course, California is as cucked as it gets. While burning through Texas, we just had to make a stop at the famed Cadillac Ranch near Amarillo. Back in the 70s, a couple of dudes thought it might be fun to bury 10 Cadillacs nose down and ass up in the middle of nowhere. Some kind of art display. Since then, they've just been rotting away out there. People come and spray paint whatever they want on them. Then 2 minutes later, somebody else shows up and spray paints over the last guy's work. Some call it Carhenge. Guess that's an apt descriptor. The wind was blowing something fierce. You really had to lean into it to get across the field to the cars. I stopped at the Second Amendment Cowboy and bought a can of Krylon so I could do my thing. The Second Amendment Cowboy is this huge Texan statue, maybe 20, 30 feet high, surrounded by much newer Cadillacs. At his feet is a bronze plaque that explains all about the Second Amendment and what a beautiful thing it is. It's a weird and wonderful spot in America, and I like the vibe. If you think about it, what they are is adjacent monuments to freedom. We have a right to defend ourselves, whether with a 12-gauge AR-15 or a trunk monkey. And we have a right to express ourselves, even if it's in spray paint on the surface of an old car. Anyone who would infringe either or both those rights is a commie asshole. Because you cannot have free speech without a means to defend that free speech, as people are discovering all over the less free world, those being arrested for tweets and Facebook posts. There's no debating it. It's a fact. Oh, but they are safe.
So safe.
My daughter took a picture of me and my artwork at the Cadillac Ranch. Maybe I'll post it, but only for Patreonies. If I do, I'll let you know. One of the most spectacular stretches of America is near Flagstaff, where Route 40 cuts through the Coconino Forest. I've been through there a lot of times, and it's always stunning. Now, forests in the east, right, in the Catskills or Adirondacks, on the floor, they're more like jungles. You almost need a machete to hack your way through the tangle of brush. But that old-growth forest a mile high in Arizona, I think that's what they call it, old-growth, you could easily ride through it on horseback. There is no brush on the floor, just pine needles. It's fantastic. We really only had one more planned stop and one unplanned. As we hurtled through the Arizona desert, a serious wind kicked up. Kind of crosswind that makes you avoid big rigs because sometimes they do blow over and you don't want to be alongside one when they do. My wife was at the wheel when a fierce gust hit us on the left side and the car really lurched. Right after, I heard an odd noise. What the hell was it? The tires were in good shape, but there was definitely something happening on the front left wheel. Had the tread separated? Bubble in the sidewall? Maybe some debris embedded? We got off at the nearest exit, which was a few miles ahead, and there was nothing there. Nothing. The exit was in a gully, maybe 20 feet lower than the roadbed, so we were mostly invisible to passing traffic. I got out and looked, and the plastic cowling in the wheel well was torn, scraping the tire. How the hell did that happen? I guess the wind got in there, coupled with 80 miles an hour of forward pressure, and it just tore it. But that plastic, it's thick and sturdy. How was it going to get it out of there? My wife looked around. There was a skeleton of a billboard nearby, and it was riddled with bullet holes. Then I remembered something I had thrown in the glove box, a magnificent folding buck knife with a partially serrated edge and a tanto point. I am a knife freak, and bucks have long been a favorite. I opened the blade and got to work on that cowling, and holy shit, that shiv sliced through it like a Jedi lightsaber. It was effortless, amazing. So we opened the hatch, had some water, and behind I saw a tractor trailer about halfway down the exit ramp, and I thought, that's weird. Why is that guy sitting there, idling, on the ramp? We got back in the car. As I drove up the on-ramp, I looked over my shoulder at that big KW. The driver smiled and gave me a thumbs up. Then it hit me. He must have been whistling down that highway when he spotted me, in a gully, fucking around with a wheel, with a woman and a young girl and a small dog, and what he was doing was keeping an eye on us. Of course, he didn't know I had a trunk monkey, but I still thought, what a cool dude. So let me take this opportunity to thank him, whoever and wherever he is, and tip my hat to all the fine truckers and road warriors out there right now. God bless you. There was one more stop we had to make. It's kind of a pilgrimage, really. A little town called Seligman, Arizona. Home of two famous eateries. The Roadkill Cafe, You Kill It, We Grill It, and Delgadillo's Snowcap. We've been there many times. Great burgers, world-class shakes, and all the authentic Route 66 kitsch and camp you can imagine. You order the food in a tiny shed and eat outside on a shaded patio. There were about 15 people out there already, all with huge touring bikes, gold wings, and electroglides. Everyone wore vests with patches. It was a club of combat veterans, and the patches told where they had fought. Desert Storm, Iraqi Freedom, and so on. A couple of very gray dudes wore patches going back to Vietnam. There were several women among them. Quite a few were carrying sidearms. I thought, oh no, what if Karens or commies see those guns? Hope they scare the living shit out of them, that's what. The vibe from those bikers was so warm it was practically sunny in the shade. They laughed and smiled and held doors for people, and you could just tell they had open and warm hearts. They were all in love with Moose. I warned them to beware that his tongue could inflict serious damage. After a while, they gathered in a circle with one older guy in the middle and sang him Happy Birthday. His vest held patches from Vietnam. We all joined in the birthday chorus, and Moose howled, and we clapped like hell when it was over. They yelled, "Speech!" And he said a few words about how great it was to be riding with all of them and how happy and good he felt on this special 70-something birthday. Only 2 days after his very first chemotherapy treatment. The guy's face was pure bliss. What an awesome dude. As tough now as he was then. I hope he kicks cancer's ass as well as he kicked commie ass all those years ago. God bless him too and heal him. From there it was straight through the vast Mojave to the city without a soul, over 400 miles. We were home. Some have asked what part of America I like best. That would be the part where my family is. But relationships aside, I've got to say, no surprise, it's the deserts of the Southwest. I've tried to figure this out forever. Not sure what it is, but I dig the desert. Part of it may be this. Some say we never feel more alive than when staring at death. There's probably some truth to that. Skydiving, bungee jumping, motorcycle racing, those things all feed that adrenaline rush that can also kill you. Maybe it's the ferocious hostility of the desert that does the same thing. It is a lethal environment that wants you dead. So maybe there's some kooky thrill from getting in and out without a bite from a rattler, or a sting from a scorpion, or dehydration, or alien abduction, or bad jerky. Then there are the ruins, of which there are many. The desert seems to have its own soundtrack, too. And some music just cries for a video of sagebrush, saguaro cactus, and a fast horse. Several listeners have asked me where I get my outro music. And the answer is, I compose and record every note myself. I get most of it from a huge online catalog called Audio Jungle. There are some world-class musicians and composers selling their marvelous work by the royalty-free download. Occasionally, though, I do record a track myself when I have time and feel inspired. I think the last one may have been way back in episode 15, my road trip to Destiny. It was my take on the good, the bad, and the ugly. Big production. I had two guitars, bass, drums, chimes, vibraslap. Ooh, it was lush. So I recorded something very fast and dirty for this episode. No second takes. I think it has that desert flavor. It was inspired by music from a movie I saw as a very young kid. It starred Charles Bronson and Robert Mitchum. Hollywood has not seen the likes of those guys since those guys. Today's movie tough guys just don't compare. Not even close. The flick was called Via Rides! ! And it was very violent and probably as historically accurate as Dr. Seuss, but who gives a shit? It made an impression on me, and this is my take on that music. Thank you. thanks for hanging with me. It's always great to be with you. Stop by the show page at thatlarryshow.com for a lot of pictures of places we visited. And if you like what you heard, click that Patreon button. Help me keep the tank full and the wheels turning. Follow the show on Facebook and Twitter. We have a lot of fun there between shows. And you'll meet some wonderful listeners there, I promise. I'll see you next Wednesday. And until that time, take no shit.